Hi, everyone, and welcome to apparently a much-anticipated podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. This is Scrambled Eggs. I'm Joe McCann. Phil Bush here with your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. Phil, I guess we're apparently in demand, according to the Twitter today.
Right. We had one person on Twitter contact us and ask where the podcast is. So
yeah, so that's like one more than we've ever had, so that's really exciting.
Right. Well, and in the internet world, we take everything and multiply it by 10 billion, and that's what reality is.
Well, yeah, that's the way, you know, when I worked at television stations, you know, if you got one complaint, that means like 10 billion people were offended.
Oh, that's so, right. So basically
it's the same logic.
Twitter is the FCC and we're Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, we're just going to turn that around and just kind of spin it into a positive.
Okay, good.
In our direction. But I want to start off today's podcast. Of course, we're going to talk about the upcoming games against Xavier and Seton Hall. Talk about the past two games, loss against Creighton, which was quite disappointing to say the least, and the win over DePaul. But I actually want to start this podcast, Phil, where I left the last one, saying that one thing I was going to keep track of over the next week was the status of Luke Fisher, the Indiana transfer who's from Germantown, Wisconsin. He was looking for a home last time we were on here, and he, as I kind of had a hint that he might, he is apparently on his way to Marquette. He announced on his Twitter page, as I'm sure most of you know by now, he announced on his Twitter page that he's on his way to Marquette. He should be enrolling soon. No official word from Marquette. They can't say anything until he's actually at the school, so I would anticipate an official announcement from Marquette on Monday or somewhere around that next week, because then he can actually start practicing with the team. And Phil, you know, not to get too hyped up about one recruit, but I am I'm very excited to know that Luke Fisher is on his way to Marquette. He definitely fills a void for next year and the years to come.
Well, I guess we can finally let Jameel McKay off the hook for making bad decisions. No, it's going to be exciting. We've got some height, 6'11". He can shoot, so he can definitely kind of play that stretch four if we need him to. With Satchel Paige coming in, we'll have two guys at 6'11". So we can kind of go semi sort of twin towers if you want, depending right. on what Buzz chooses to do. And he'll be able to, he won't be able to play for us until, grades are turned in for the first semester next year, but he can practice with the team. So he should be able to hit the ground running come really conference season when he's eligible to play.
Yeah, I think that's the important thing. Yeah, he does have to sit out a year's worth of games, so two semesters. So he has to sit out this spring semester and next fall semester. And, you know, as you mentioned, the Satchel Paige Pierce, the freshman that's going to be coming on board, you know, I didn't expect him to play much just because he's a freshman and he'd be the only guy above 6'9 on the roster. But, you know, it's going to be that way for the first semester next year. But when you have a guy, a big man in Fisher, who's going to be 6'11", he's going to be able to challenge Pierce in practice, which is going to be good for his development. And he's just going to provide some leadership and just more stability. To have a guy who's been in college for a year and a half starting for you when Big East play begins next year, I think that's going to be really important as Marquette tries to replace Otule and Gardner next year.
Right. Well, and we'll have some frontline help that we didn't necessarily believe we would before. With Pierce and then Fisher and then hopefully a very healthy Steve Taylor Jr. We've got some options in the front court to go with what appear to be some good options in the back court with Dwayne Wilson coming back and with some incoming recruits playing the swing positions, as well as a more mature Deontay Burton and hopefully a Juan Johnson that can play in a game.
That basically closed my book on the Luke Fisher report. Happy he's coming to Marquette. It's going to be great to have him part of the program. It's going to help out. But that transitions to my next portion of this podcast. Let's talk about the last couple of games. And, you know, as I was saying heading into last week, Phil, one of my big concerns with the Marquette offense is in close games, the freshmen just don't play. I mean, the rotation shortens. And for the most part, generally speaking, that makes sense. You don't want to play 10 or 11 guys. You know, guys you don't really trust in conference play in close games, but it just seems like Juwan Johnson just doesn't get a chance to play, and I'm not sure I get it all that much, because I'm not sure he's that far behind Jake Thomas on both ends of the floor. And, you know, Deontay Burton gets in the game, but even he, against DePaul, he only played 12 minutes.
Well, yeah, well, and I think, you know, for anyone that watched the DePaul game, the first half, Deontay Burton got a fair number. I think if I'm looking at it right, he got 18 minutes total and only two in the second half. If you look at the way the DePaul game went, Buzz great vastly shortened up the bench, went seven deep with only spot minutes for Otule and Juan Anderson. He essentially went with five players for the most part in the second half when Marquette was trailing DePaul. So for whatever reason, Buzz has decided he's got his core set, and Juan Johnson just isn't, you know, because in the second half of the DePaul game, Juan Anderson played 5 minutes, and Chris Otule played four. So then he had Jameel Wilson, Devontae Gardner, who played all 20 minutes, Jake Thomas, who played all 20 minutes, and then Todd Mayo played 17, Derek Wilson played 18. So the bench got real short because he essentially just spotted players as he, I think the only reason Juan Anderson got minutes was Jameel Wilson got into foul trouble, shockingly. But to your point, I still don't get Jake Thomas playing 20 minutes in the second half. I mean, you can kind of say the results are, you know, the proof's in the pudding, and that we came back from 10 down at one point and beat DePaul with Jake Thomas playing 20 minutes. But I don't see how Juwan Johnson doesn't help do more than Jake Thomas does.
Yeah, and I think that's been the debate for the most part, between all Marquette fans, really, is what does Juwan Johnson have to do to get on the floor more? Because when he is on the floor, granted, it's been against lesser competition, but he has shown an ability to score, and I think the offense just flows better when he's out there because I think he can create for himself better, and I think teams have to respect his ability to drive. You know, Jake still only made 1 2-point shot on the season. Every time he drives to the basket, I just kind of cringe a little bit. So I'm like, all right, you know, you can shoot threes, I'll give you that. You know, I'm fine with him, you know, as long as he makes a couple threes. And he did hit a couple threes that helped come, you know, kind of spark the comeback into the DePaul game, which was looking really early in the first half, looking really ugly early in the first half. But I guess my thing is I'm not sure if Marquette would have been down by that much if Juwan Johnson may have gotten a little more run there early on. Maybe it's just the thing, maybe Buzz is trying to teach him a lesson. You know, Buzz is big on teaching, big on lessons and practice, and hopefully Juwan gets it and can contribute to this team, because I think he has the talent to contribute to it. And Burton does too, and he's shown that. And, you know, Buzz said, I think in an interview I saw this week, that Burton's one of the most talented players he's ever coached. And if that's the case, I think he should play a little more as well. And I think we may have to see that a little more, because the other interesting aspect of the DePaul game was Jameel Wilson starting at the point and Derek Wilson not in the starting lineup, so maybe kind of an indication that Buzz really is starting to think about shaking up the starting lineup, or and maybe shaking up the rotation a little bit, because obviously the offensive numbers as a whole have not been very good.
Right. Well, and it's interesting though, because Derek Wilson didn't start, which was kind of shocking to me, but you know, I welcomed it because, you know, I think Derek Wilson has just had some struggles. But he still got 31 minutes. Jameel Wilson got 31 minutes and had 6 turnovers. So I think that Jameel Wilson as a point guard is a good thing overall, but it's definitely a work in progress, and it's not the total answer. Yeah. You know,
as I said before, I still have apprehensions about just because taking him away from the four,
right?
Because you lose so much there. Because he's better there than he is at the point. But if you're not getting any offense with Derek Wilson at the point, then maybe it is, you know, wise to shake it up a little bit. But I think maybe that shakeup should maybe include Burton a little more, because when Burton's been out there, he's definitely proven he can play, especially on the offensive end. As I've said before, I think he can create his shot on his own as well as anyone on the team.
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing, and I think you're starting to see a spark of it, it's kind of been an evolution, and this is why you play him, because he's a freshman. Initially, he was a little gun-shy, wasn't taking his shots. Then he started to feel more comfortable, started taking his shots, and that was part of the problem. The ball kind of stopped with him, and once he got it, it was going up or it was a turnover. And now he's starting to get a little more time into the offense and feels comfortable, you know, either creating a shot if it's there or passing it off and creating a better shot for somebody else. But the other thing to kind of harp on Derek Wilson a little bit, again, I wouldn't say I'm part of his fan club. I think he's physically capable of doing the job. I think there's a mental block there somehow. And I mean, one of the things that we saw in the second half, Devontae Gardner was absolutely doing work, and DePaul didn't have an answer for him. And at every turn in the as Marquette got up, DePaul started doubling down on Devontae with Derek Wilson's man. Wherever Derek Wilson was, his man came off and doubled down on and Gardner. And a couple of times Gardner had to dish off to Derek, who did the right thing cutting the basket. But with one exception, every time it just didn't end well. And Derek Wilson has to finish that. He's playing essentially unguarded, and he still didn't get any points because the backside help came and swatted him. The one time he was able to, you know, essentially quick assist, he got it in the lane and then turned around and sent it over to Mayo, who drained the three. But Derek Wilson has the physical tools. He's just got to do it. But I don't know that we can be wildly successful with him getting 31 minutes a game the way he's playing.
Yeah, unfortunately, I just think Derek Wilson is a very good backup point guard. Yeah. I think he's a guy in the role he was in last year when he was a guy who come off the bench, give you a few defensive stops, not turn the ball over, and just kind of maintain the offense until the starting point guard comes back in. Unfortunately, we don't have that star starting point guard this year as we did last year with Junior. This year, when he's having to take on the full role and play 30 minutes a game, then I think he's been exposed a little more, as you were basically just describing there. He's just not a threat to score from the outside, and teams know that, and they're backing off of him. And that has hurt some of our big guys. But the big plus side of the DePaul game was, of course, Devontae Gardner's 28 points. Devontae challenged in the media by Buzz. And I'm sure Buzz has said even worse things to him in practice behind closed doors.
I don't think I want to even know the things he said to Devontae in practice.
But he said, for those of you who missed it, that Devontae has to work harder. He's not working hard enough in practice. He's not getting to the free throw line. And we saw a return to that for Devontae Gardner in the DePaul game. And that was really the driving force to get Marquette back into that game and win the game. He had 28 points, 10 of those coming from the free throw line. And if Marquette is going to be anything close to successful in the Big East, they need more efforts like that from Gardner. Was it because Buzz challenged him? Maybe. Was it because something else was working in the offense just to get him the ball in better positions? Also possible. But bottom line is, we need more of that from Devontae Gardner if Marquette is going to reach double digits in Big East play.
Yeah. What was interesting was that Buzz challenged him in the media and essentially called him, you know, for lack of a better phrase, lazy. And then a couple of days later, Devontae was starting in the DePaul game. So you wonder, did he, you know, respond effectively? I mean, because Buzz always talks about you got to earn your minutes in practice. You got to earn the right to start in practice. And right. Buzz started him. So does that mean Devontae responded? You know, kind of what went on there? But, yeah, more to your point, Devontae has got to be the guy. I mean, he played a ton of minutes. We no longer should question his fitness. He can play as many minutes as his fouls allow him to. I think the Creighton game was just a matchup nightmare for him, so we didn't get to play as many minutes because, they just
rained
threes.
He can't guard
threes.
The four, right.
You know, he can't guard out in the perimeter, but for that matter, neither can Chris Otule. But, he needs to be just constantly fed the ball and just go to work and draw fouls. And, I mean, he got DePaul's big men into serious foul trouble in the first, Mark Kukas had two fouls in the first 34 seconds. Mm-hmm. So, that's the Devontae we need from the DePaul game. Now, we got to see if he can put two games in a row together, if he can play like that against Xavier, and Stainbrook, who is a bit portly and a bit slow. Devontae should be able to eat him up. We got to see if he can put two games together.
I would prefer like 15 games together.
Well, yeah.
I'll start with two, but
yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, but obviously that's one thing. And, is the Marquette offense maybe turning around a little bit? Rob Lowe actually wrote about that on Crack Sidewalks this week. He said basically what he said in his blog, and you can go over to Crack Sidewalks and check it out. Or just scroll down if you're on Crack Sidewalks right now listening to this.
Right.
Because it would be the one right below the podcast you're listening to. He said, can Marquette's offense be good again? Are they on the road to recovery? And he pointed to a few statistics that are maybe trending upward for Marquette. Effective field goal percentage slightly on the way up. But the long and the short of it is, he said, if they turn the ball over a little bit less or get a couple more offensive rebounds a game, the Marquette effective field goal percentage should be high enough that they should be winning more games.
Right. Well, the trick there, and this is where Buzz earns his money as a coach, so they need to rebound a little bit better, and they need to and or turn over the ball a little bit less. Both of those things would seem to indicate Jameel Wilson at the four for rebounding and Derek Wilson at the one for not turning the ball over. Can that lineup be effective without, you know, and still keep that effective field goal percentage up? I don't, you know, with in theory playing 4-on-5 on offense with Derek not being effective right now, can you get the rebounds up? Can you keep the turnovers down and still keep that effective field goal percentage up? I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of debating with Rob on Twitter about on Wednesday. Was I just don't see – it's tough. I have a hard time just buying a stat like that that says Marquette is on its way up or could be really good soon, when what I've seen from Marquette, especially against some of the better teams they've played, is when the offense has looked its absolute worst. Now, I guess you're saying, well, of course Marquette's offense is always going to look worse against good teams and it's going to look great against bad teams. But it's just so vastly different in games against Creighton or New Mexico or – Wisconsin or Ohio State. Of course, those are the top two of the top four teams in the country. But still, but you know, when you're blowing out Samford and IUPUI and Ball State, well, that's great if you can have a very high effective field goal percentage because you're getting fast breaks and getting wide open threes and whatnot. But I'm not sold that Marquette can put up great numbers like Rob is suggesting they could against some of the better teams in the Big East, even some of the middle-of-the-road teams in the Big East.
Yeah,
like, say, Xavier, that we're going to be looking at next. Xavier might be in the upper half.
Well, the thing I struggle with is, you know, there's statistics and there's the eye test, right? I mean, I want to believe the statistics, and maybe there's some truth to them from the standpoint of, I was thinking about it, when has Marquette's offense ever looked silky smooth? Have we ever had a season where we look at the offense and we're like, man, it's just firing on all cylinders? I feel like Buzz's offense is always a little bit labored, especially when we're going up against very competitive teams. So, you know, is it a case where we need to favor the statistics a little more that seems to indicate maybe the offense is better than we think? I don't know. It's hard for me to say.
Yeah, maybe so. I guess I'm trying to think of like an offense that was just really smooth. I guess maybe towards the end with the Amigos, I guess, when...
That was the only one I could really come up with.
Under Buzz, anyway, under, you know, James McNeil and Matthews. Now, of course, when you had Diener and Wade out there, that was just about as smooth as it could possibly be.
Right.
But that's a different... That's not even a fair comparison, really, those two guys. But yeah, like Marquette, I've heard the term rock fight used to describe Marquette's offense and winning games in the past few years. And maybe Marquette will just have to win a bunch of rock fights, just a bunch of ugly games that are just in the 50s and 60s. And obviously that would require them playing very good defense, which for the most part they have. Now, the concern, of course, against Creighton, that they left so many guys wide open for the year, is just a matchup nightmare. But you're not going to get that matchup very often in college basketball, period. Creighton's a unique team, and you just got to hope maybe they miss a few of those threes next time you play them.
Well, and Creighton kind of their lineup is their strength of their lineup is kind of the flaw in Buzz's defensive philosophy. I mean, we always talk about the offensive paint touches, right? That Buzz wants to get the ball into the paint, and then from there they can kind of look to score out of a paint touch, but he kind of also wants a defensive paint touch. When he's on defense, everything comes from the center out, and so you see a lot of doubling down in the post, or you see a man running to the post and then out from there. And against Creighton, I mean, Doug McDermott is, you know, he can claim he's a post player all he wants, and he's relatively effective there. But first and foremost, he's a shooter on the outside. So running to the paint and then out to Doug just gives him more time to kind of shoot. So, you know, I think that was just kind of one of those matchup nightmares. You know, I hate to say it, but unless something drastically changes, I think this season, the iteration of these two teams, Creighton and Marquette, 9 times out of 10, Creighton's going to win that matchup.
Yeah, I think so. Hopefully Marquette only plays Creighton one more time, and maybe somebody does Marquette a favor and can knock Creighton off in the Big East tournament, and then Marquette could hopefully go past that and win the Big East tournament, which, for me right now, I think that might be Marquette's best path to the tournament.
Right.
Because you look at the Big East as a whole, I'm not sure we're getting very many teams into the tournament. If I were to put the over-under on Big East teams in the dance, Phil, at 3.5, what are you taking?
I'm taking the under solidly. I would put it at 3. I think it's Villanova is a cent, you know, barring some sort of thing, some sort of fallout is a sure thing. I think Butler is likely. Georgetown, I would have said, but apparently they messed the bed this evening.
Yeah, but you said Butler's likely. Did you mean Creighton?
Yeah, excuse me. I meant Creighton, and I would Villanova, put Butler Creighton in ahead of Georgetown.
Yeah, Butler's actually 0-2 in the league.
Are
right
they really?
Now.
Did I miss that?
Yeah, they're Xavier. I would say. Has the edge on to be the third team right now. Yeah, Georgetown had a terrible loss at Providence. They got beat pretty badly. And I think Georgetown, honestly, is kind of like Marquette right now, a team that you look at and say this team should have some talent, but they're so up and down. I think Marquette and Georgetown are probably going to split their regular season matchups.
I'm not as afraid of those games as I was.
Right. Yeah, me neither. I think Marquette and Georgetown are just kind of right there in the middle of the Big East, maybe fighting to be that fourth, maybe get lucky and be a third team in the Big East, with Villanova and Creighton being kind of the class of the league right now, in my opinion. But I think there are probably 3 or 4 more teams that could certainly beat Georgetown or Marquette out for fourth or fifth place. So, you know, disaster strikes, you can find yourselves in seventh or eighth place in the league. Hopefully that doesn't happen for Marquette. But if disaster strikes, it absolutely could.
Right.
They could fall that far. But
well, the only positive that comes out of the setup in the league is there's not really any – the team, you know, we talked about Creighton being a matchup nightmare. The true matchup nightmare, I think, for us would be a team that presses. So we're for a lot of reasons, we're lucky Louisville's not in the, you know, we hate them, and they're a team that would just destroy us in the press, and we've seen that enough over our rivalry games over the years. But, you know, Derek Wilson in there with a team that presses, and he can't shoot a free throw, holy cow, look out.
That would spell disaster. I think I would actually be curious to see, just because I'm curious, what kind of lineup Buzz would throw out there if he was facing a team that pressed the heck out of him.
Right.
Like, I think you've got to put Derek and Jamil out there the whole game, really.
Right.
Because those are your best ball handlers. And I think that would be a situation where you would play Juwan Johnson.
You'd have to. There's no way Jake Thomas is athletic enough to handle or can handle the ball effectively enough. And, you know, maybe that's what we keep belaboring it, but we got to get some minutes for Juwan Johnson. He's too talented to not play in a game at all.
I agree. And hopefully we see him more against Xavier. And I think Xavier is going to be a bit of a tricky game for Marquette. I'm definitely concerned about it. Because when you look at the Musketeers' schedule, I think they were kind of projected in the lower half of the Big East, maybe even one of the bottom three when the season began. But, you know, they have some ups and some downs. They have some nice wins. They beat Cincinnati quite convincingly, actually. They beat them 64-47. They went to Alabama and won. They've started 2-0 in league play with wins over St. John's and Butler. They've actually been kind of lucky because this is their third straight home game to start conference play. So they've kind of been the beneficiary of maybe a favorable schedule, at least through the first three games. But, you know, then they've had some losses, but none of them I would say would be terrible losses. They lost to Iowa, who's ranked on, they actually all three of their losses were on neutral floors in one of those tournaments. They lost to Iowa, Tennessee, and USC. Those were their, and other than that, they're undefeated.
Yeah.
So they're winless on neutral floors. And
it's a good thing that the NCAA tournament has home games.
Yes. Yeah, they could be totally screwed once they get to the Big East tournament and start playing on a neutral floor. But and then Cincinnati was it was played at the US Bank Arena, so they beat Cincinnati there. So I think this is a tough kick because I think Xavier, for the most part, has proven itself able to grind it out and win some tough games against some teams that maybe even were better than them. And I think at home against Marquette, I'm concerned that maybe Xavier plays over its head a little again and Marquette underachieves a little bit. And I'm actually concerned about this being a loss for Marquette.
I see exactly what you're talking about, and you know, I keep setting myself up for the fall. I keep getting cautiously optimistic. You know, my prediction for the Creighton game was obviously way, way off, and I was forced to drink even more than I had planned to for New Year's Eve as a result. But the Xavier thing, it'll be an interesting matchup because they like to – I watched them a little bit on that awesome New Year's Eve marathon that Fox Sports 1 had. That was a lot of fun, got a lot of Big East basketball in. But they like to run through Stainbrook a little bit, their big kind of beefy center. I wonder if that'll kind of be strength on strength if Otule and or Gardner can't, you know, at least slow him down and force some other folks to, because they really have two main scorers, Kristen and Stainbrook. If you can shut down one, perhaps puts the load on the other. I don't know.
Yeah, then they have just a bunch of guys behind them that average around 7 a game. So you just maybe worry about one of those guys blowing up for, you know, 15 or 20.
Like the coach's son.
That Neil did against New Mexico.
Yeah.
Or for New Mexico against Marquette. So I think I would worry about that. But beyond that, this should be a winnable game, really.
Well,
I'm just continue to be the pessimist and expect the worst.
Well, and
I think the challenge comes to Marquette.
I agree. I think that's where I'm optimistic is because, or why I'm optimistic is because this is the last. Well, you know, Georgetown may no longer be a Marquette win if we beat them on the road, but this Xavier game on the road is the last. Maybe winnable is not right because it can any given day anyone can win, but it's the last should be a win game on the road that's a quality win for Marquette. I mean, going into Villanova is gonna be extremely tough. Going into Butler,
yeah, like what we're saying is that's already chalking up Villanova on the road as a loss.
Oh yeah, I think it has to be.
And this is the last road game that would be decent that is winnable.
I'm glad you're a broadcast major because you said it much more succinctly than I ever could.
I'm just trying to translate for the people.
Yes, if you could. This is the last road game that we can really kind of have a chance to put on the resume to kind of help us out. So we'll see. They got to continue to play well. I think the rotation is going to be interesting. Does Buzz play kind of seven players and then spot minutes for Burton, or is the flow of the game such that somebody like Juan Johnson and Deontay Burton can get more minutes and kind of prove themselves?
Yeah, and I'd be curious to see, like, what kind of starting lineup he throws out there and if he sticks with it or just say, nah, screw this, Derek, get back in there. And you know, it was nice to start Jameel and Devontae. And I guess depending on the matchup thing, I'm still not that big on Devontae and Otule playing together. But again, that is a matchup thing. It depends on who Devontae has to guard, I guess.
Right.
But even on offense, I prefer to have Devontae by himself down low, really, and just have more perimeter guys to kind of spread the floor out a little bit and have more defensive guys kind of spread out, as opposed to maybe another guy guarding Otule who could easily come over and double Devontae. But
when you play them together, offensively I think it's fine. Defensively, you know, especially in this lineup, okay, you say Otule guards Stainbrook. Okay, great, that's a matchup we hope to win. But then who does Gardner guard? Do they have some sort of face-up four? Because I think, especially in the Creighton game where Gardner got almost no minutes, he just can't guard out. You know, he's quick and athletic for what on the offensive end, but on the defensive end, he's just not quick enough to guard out in the perimeter. And that's going to be an issue if, you know, that's going to be a case of one of the no-name players, if you will, or the lesser-known players going off in that kind of arrangement.
Yeah. And hopefully that's not the case. I mean, I guess maybe Fillmore would be the guy Devontae would be matched up with. He's a 6'8 forward. He's the third leading scorer. So maybe that would be the guy that Devontae would have to guard if, you know, Tule were in there together. So anxious to see how that works out. I hope I'm wrong about it. I still just, my gut feeling says it just doesn't go well just because things are not going well for Marquette on the road. Things are not going well for Marquette when they face teams that are kind of on their level or better. So I kind of feel, I personally fear Xavier will be a loss for Marquette.
Yeah, I could definitely see it. I'm maybe not as pessimistic, but I fear the worst and I hope for the best with this game.
That's kind of our motto for the season, really.
I'm not getting my hopes up anymore. I've learned.
Expect the worst, hope for the best.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm not going to expect the worst coming up on Saturday when Marquette's at home against Seton Hall. Maybe the worst team in the league, if not the second worst ahead of DePaul.
Well, I don't know.
They do have a win in conference play over Providence, but Providence just beats Georgetown, so who knows?
Well, by the transitive property, Seton Hall, number one in the country.
The best. But still, Seton Hall should be one of the worst teams in the league. He's one of the bottom three for sure. I guess putting the jinx on him here, but I don't think Marquette should have a problem with Seton Hall, because much like DePaul, even if it starts slow, Marquette should be able to win that game mostly almost on talent alone. I wouldn't go that far, but even if they lose to Xavier, hopefully they bounce back, put things together like they did in the DePaul game, and just kind of slowly grind back in it, get Devontae Gardner to the free throw line, and just beat an inferior team at home.
Well, that's what you would hope is that was the disappointing thing about the DePaul game. During that entire game, even when DePaul, and this will probably come back to bite me in the butt when we go down there into that house of horrors at the Allstate Arena, but you know, during the DePaul game, even when Marquette was losing, you're sitting there going, DePaul is such an inferior team. What the heck is going on? So not only do I want to see Marquette perform well against a good team, I want to see them dominate against DePaul's not the worst team in basketball, but they're clearly an inferior team. Marquette should dominate them. The same goes for Seton Hall.
We saw that. Yeah, we saw that in non-conference play when Marquette was dominating the likes of Samford and Grambling. But I mean, DePaul and Seton Hall, as bad as they are in the Big East, they're much better than Grambling and Samford.
Right.
So
yeah, we gotta get a dominant win against Seton Hall and get a solid win against Xavier, and who knows, maybe then the seats on the bandwagon will get slightly less empty.
Maybe. What would you say would be more likely to happen for this team? Have a big win or a horrible loss? I was gonna say like a win like beating Villanova, or just a stinking turd of a loss against like Seton Hall or DePaul.
I think a horrible loss is much more likely with this team. I think they have enough talent and capability to beat anyone. I just don't think they're likely to beat anyone. I think it's much more likely that the wheels might come off in some game. You know, might have some sort of horrific. 20 turnover game. You know, Jameel Wilson and Derek Wilson can't bring the ball up to save their lives. I think that's much more likely than it is to have a dominant victory.
Yeah, I unfortunately do agree with that. I think a terrible loss is more likely. But I will say this: whatever happens first, that might be the trend for the season. Like, if the first thing that happens is they get that horrible loss, that might kind of do them in, and there will be no coming back from that. But if they get the big win first, then I think the momentum could maybe get going. Maybe the offense does start to turn around, as Rob suggested it might. And then maybe Marquette could get back into discussion of possibly making the tournament as an at-large. Got a long way to go before we get there. But I would say if Marquette gets the big win before they get the terrible loss, then maybe I think there's a little hope for them.
Well, and what do you think of this season kind of being a resetting of expectations? I mean, let's be honest, as Marquette basketball fans, the last 3 or 4 years have been quite good compared to other teams out on the landscape. And you know, part of the issue this year was that I think makes everyone disappointed is in previous years we exceeded expectations. Expectations were low, and we you know, vastly outperformed them. This season, expectations were way high, and we're underperforming, certainly. How much we're underperforming, it's still debatable. But, you know, how much of this is kind of a resetting of, you know, kind of taking a little of the spoiledness out of the Marquette fan base and kind of resetting and saying, hey, listen, you know, you don't get Sweet 16s every year just by, you know, decree.
Yeah, I wouldn't maybe phrase it as resetting expectations, but I know exactly what you're saying. I would maybe rephrase it as a return to the mean.
Yeah.
Just because you're not going to overachieve every year. You know, you're going to have some years when you miss the tournament. I mean, even guys like Izzo and maybe not Self and Krzyzewski, but guys like Izzo and Patino have years, and Roy Williams have years that they miss the tournament. But, you know, it's how they bounce back and get the next recruiting class in there and then get back to Final Four quality. For Marquette, yeah, you know, Buzz has done an unbelievable job since he's taken over at Marquette, and the past 3 years have been unbelievable, and certainly he's earned more than a grace period as far as, you know, maybe not making the tournament. Yeah, I don't think any rational Marquette fan should freak out and really be concerned about the future of the program if Marquette misses the tournament this year. Buzz will say, you know, we expect to go to the Sweet 16 every year, and we expect to get to the Final Four. That's fine. Keep expectations high. That's great. But I think it's fine to say we just had a down year.
Right.
Just wasn't our year. And I, especially when you consider that Buzz was expecting to be coaching a senior Vander Blue, a healthy Dwayne Wilson, and have Jameel McKay on the bench as well. This wasn't exactly what he had planned on back in April.
Right. Could argue that the total talent on the team next year is greater than the talent on the team this year.
Yeah, that's something I thought about when Fisher transferred. Was something I would have thought was pretty much impossible back in September, but I think it's very possible that next year's team could be better than this team. Because, you know, heading into the season, said, well, you know, senior-laden team, hopefully Derek Wilson takes a big step forward, Jameel and Devontae and Chris Otule all have big senior seasons, and they should have enough offense with the freshmen, and they should make the tournament and, you know, maybe get a win or two. But next year looks so bad because we got no big men, and it could be really, really young, could be troublesome. But now I'm thinking, now that I've seen this team for a good 3 months now, I think it's pretty fair to say that they're an average team, you know, not a bad team, not a great team, but they're just an average college basketball team, an NIT team. But looking at next year, you're going to have, they're going to be really young, but they could, I guess it really depends on how good Dwayne Wilson is, really.
Right.
And if any of the incoming freshmen are shooters, if any of them can hit jump shots.
Right.
And if they can, and then they can get out there and play, then I think, I think next year's team could be better once Luke Fisher is eligible. So we wouldn't even know in November and December. However, once we get into January and February and when Fisher's on the floor, then, yeah, I think that team could be much better than this team and would have a good chance of making the NCAA tournament.
Well, and I think what's going to be interesting is next year, Buzz is, you know, there's always the argument, Buzz never plays freshmen, a la Juwan Johnson not getting any minutes against DePaul. Buzz is going to have to play freshman next year.
Well, yeah, if Buzz doesn't play freshman, then next year he might start four guys.
Right. I mean, we're...
you know, like, we're not going to start Todd Mayo because that's just not something. Todd's just been always in the doghouse as far as never being allowed to start, and I can certainly understand that. But, I mean, with Dwayne redshirting and Luke Fisher taking a transfer redshirt,
for
lack of a better term. Yes. Well, there would technically be like six or seven freshmen on the roster next year, especially if Malik Harris eventually gets signed.
Right.
So like half the roster would be freshmen.
Yeah.
So freshmen are going to play next year, and they're going to play a lot. Two of them will be redshirt freshmen. But I would expect, not to break down next year too much, but I would expect Ahmad Hill to play a lot
right
next year.
Well, but the reason I kind of bring this up is that, and there's always a balance there, but looking at next year, that's why you got to get time for Burton and Johnson on the court. So you have some players with game experience for next year.
Right. And make sure they want to come back.
Right.
Because they're not necessarily obligated to come back. They might say, well, you know, maybe I don't, there's not a spot for me here. But I would hope that those guys get some time and get some game experience and can move into starting roles next year, because I think they're going to be a major part of Marquette's future for sure, and also just next year, which could be a transitional year. It's appearing more and more that maybe this is the transitional year as Marquette kind of rebuilds and kind of loses some guys that Buzz has been used to in his first few years on the job and during this run of Sweet 16s that's been so great. But it's going to be a lot of freshmen and sophomores playing on next year's team, and hopefully it will be an experienced Juwan Johnson and an experienced Deontay Burton that are playing a lot of significant minutes for that team next year, and I would like to see them doing that this year.
Yeah, I think Juan. I don't think anything's changed from the last pod. Juwan Johnson needs to average at least 10 minutes a game by the end of the season, and I think Deontay should be getting at least 15 a game, maybe even more.
Yeah, I would add four to, or add five to both of those numbers you just threw out. I would like to see Juwan near 15 yep. and Deontay surpassing 20, really. Because the more I watch Deontay, even if he is a little lost on defense, I think he makes up for it on offense. And maybe it's not perfect. Maybe it's not ideal what Buzz would like, maybe defensively or in practice. But I think sometimes maybe you just have to just accept the fact that you've got some guys who play offensively better than they practice and maybe don't do things exactly the way you want to, but you got to try to win some games. And I think those guys can win Marquette some games if they're thrown out there. They're going to make their freshman mistakes, and that's fine. And I think I'm kind of ready to live with those right now, just for the off chance that they could play. But I will say this about Buzz, and I was actually kind of thinking about this during the Creighton game. Buzz has got to be looking at this team every day and thinking, how can I get more offense out of this team? Because I think he did put Johnson in the Creighton game and really didn't get very much out of him. And so it's not like, I don't want to make it sound like we're making it up like to say that, you know, Juwan Johnson is like Dwayne Wade sitting there on the bench. You know, he's not that much of a difference maker. I just think he adds a little bit more than some of the guys who are playing.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. He's, from an athletic standpoint, he's the exact opposite of Jake Thomas. Yeah. You know, and so Jake Thomas, he can hit some threes, obviously. But Juwan Johnson can as well. And Juwan Johnson just forces his man to guard the full length of the court, you know, inside the perimeter and outside the perimeter. Again, I don't want to say this season's over with, because it's certainly not, and Buzz has definitely performed pseudo miracles in the past and brought the team together and improved them. Who knows, the offensive output in the back half of the second half of the DePaul game, maybe that's an indicator of things to come. But you got to start running these players out and see what you got. Otherwise, otherwise you're going to go into next season and start all over again, not knowing what the heck you have and what you're going to do with it.
Yeah, I guess that's really just a basic point we kind of keep harping on. If what you're running out there isn't working, just try something else.
Right.
Just try something else. Try another guy. Try a different rotation. Try a different lineup. But and he did try that against DePaul. Was trying a little bit of Jameel at the point. Maybe we see more of that against Xavier and Seton Hall. It remains to be seen. I'm anxious to see what happens. Hopefully, next time we speak, Marquette has two wins. I remain pessimistic about it until I can see Marquette vastly improve offensively. That maybe the team will be going in the right direction. Hope I'm wrong, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, that's why they play the games.
That's why they play the games. Again, we want to thank you for listening in to Scrambled Eggs here. Again, you can always check us out and contact us on Twitter. At Crack Sidewalks is one way. Of course, you can contact us individually. I'm Joe McCann 3 on Twitter. Phil would be M-O-O-O-F 23. You can leave messages on our Facebook page. There's a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. And yeah, I think that's everything.
Yeah, I think so. If nothing else, contact us. Let us know what we're doing wrong. Tell us we suck, whatever. Criticism is welcome. Just let us know what we're doing.
And praise is great, too. But, you know, whatever. Questions, comments, criticism. But we appreciate you guys tuning in and following Marquette basketball along with us this season. Again, for everyone here, everyone would just be, you know, me and Phil.
Do you have a mouse in your pocket?
No.
This is weird.
No, I do not. Again, for everyone at Crack Sidewalks, Phil and myself, seashells and balloons, everyone.